Welcome to Switzerland in Sound, produced and presented by Bob Zanotti.
Welcome to Switzerland in Sound. This is Bob Zanotti. It's time for another Letter from Switzerland, in which we try to reflect Swiss life through our own eyes. Today's letter is written and presented by my American-Canadian friend, Aubrey Diem, from his home in the mountains of Canton Valley in southern Switzerland.
The ski season is over, and my mountain village of Zinal has become a ghost town. Hotels are closed until June. The post office is only open until 10:30 a.m. The kiosk stays open until noon, and only a few residents are scurrying around, shopping for food, or having a glass of wine in the only restaurant that remains open. The weather is unstable. It rains, snows, and some days the sun shines. It is supposed to be spring, but there's still plenty of snow on the ski runs. Yes, it has been a long, hard winter, and often the winter suddenly changes into a brief summer. Springtime here is very short, or even non-existent. A few years ago, in August, it snowed so much that the famous Sierra Zinal mountain race for participants from all over the world had to be canceled. Fortunately, Zinal is only 30 kilometers of mountain driving from the Rhone Valley. And there, it really is spring. So I and a friend from Basel, who has a small chalet in Grimentz, about 10 minutes by car from Zinal, decided to go down to the Valais cantonal capital, Sion. There is much to see and do there, from excellent shopping and eating to visiting fascinating museums. We parked the car in an underground garage and walked to the nearby Museum of Art that has tableaus from the 18th, 19th, and 20th centuries. I was excited to see a painting that the famous Austrian artist Oskar Kokoschka had made of the Rhone Valley in Sion. There it was on one of the floors of the small museum that occupied what had probably been a renovated dwelling. It was one of a series of works of European cities that included Stockholm and Berlin. After visiting the museum, we walked to a brasserie that was located in the town center. My friend, who has just returned from a holiday in Japan, ordered a Japanese dish and was pleased with what was served. Being Saturday, the brasserie was crowded with families, but nevertheless, the service was efficient and the food was tasty. As I was enjoying my wine made from the grapes grown in the sun on the slopes above Sion, I thought of those artists who had spent their last years in Switzerland as a place of peace and refuge. The Russian, Marianne von Werken, had to leave Germany because of the First World War, and she moved to Saint-Pré, a fishing village west of Lausanne, and then to Ascona in the Italian-speaking canton of Ticino, where she lived until 1938. Her paintings may be seen in the small museum Arte Moderna in Ascona. Then there was Ernst Kirchner, the German expressionist who moved to Davos, the ski resort in Canton Graubünden, where Thomas Mann, the setting for his world-famous novel, The Magic Mountain. Kirchner's latest works may be seen in the relatively new Kirchner Museum in Davos. In addition, the cultural movement called Dada emerged during the First World War in Zurich, the largest Swiss city, attracting artists, writers, and philosophers to the Café Voltaire. During their inane gatherings, the Dada movement tried to ridicule and counter the madness that was sweeping over the European continent from 1914 to 1918. Von Werfken, Kokoschka, and Kirchner survived the carnage, but others such as Fran Marc and August Macke, German friends and colleagues of von Werfken during the peaceful days that preceded the war, were killed in battle. For those who survived, neutral and peaceful Switzerland was a giant psychiatric ward that could heal their scars. The road back to Zinal was in good shape, but unfortunately I was turning from spring back to winter and more snow.
In addition to the newly produced material offered on the website and here on PCJ Media, we also feature some old vintage reports and features from the pre-Switzerland in Sound days. The information they contain may no longer be valid or up to date, but we present this material as a sound document for your listening pleasure. Here is one of those vintage items.
Dr. Eckenberger, briefly, how far back does the story of wine go in Switzerland? What is a brief history?
Well, it's interesting that relics were found on the Lake of Neuchâtel going back to the time of 3,000 years before Christ, the Neoliticum. But nobody knows if these finds were grapes which were grown or which were only taken, because in this time people living in this area certainly were hunters and assemblers of material to eat and to live on. Further down now, we don't know anything before this time. But now the real fact is that in Roman times, the Romans came to Switzerland through the passes to the canton of Valais, and they introduced grapes because they wanted to have their fruit over there. And we know that from Columella, one of the writers of the Roman times, that he says, he speaks several times, I think about 30 times, on Vitis Aminea. That's the Aminea which is grown still in small parts in Valais. Then we know that there are other grape varieties like the Duris, Uva Duricina, the Arvin, which was called Uva Helvina, and maybe the Elbling, which was called the Vitis Albuelis. And this one was going through from this part also to the other parts of Switzerland. And this Albuelis was grown till this century, when it was replaced by new grape varieties.
As a matter of fact, I believe that one or two of the varieties you just mentioned in Canton Valley are unique to Canton Valley. They've survived all those centuries.
Right. I think nowhere else you can have these grape varieties. And they are real specialities of this canton.
Is there any indication or evidence that the Romans understood viticulture, the science of viticulture, the way we do today, in the sense that they tried to use the right kind of grape for a particular soil, this sort of thing?
Well, I think they were more or less traditionalists and did what they could with the grapes they had. But they had at least 40 or 50 different grape varieties. And it was the problem for them, I think, to find grape varieties adopted to the cooler climate in the parts where they found their empire. It's interesting that in the Basel Landschaft, that's near Baal, when a part of a hill slipped down, and in this part there we found parts of grapes, grape woods and sticks. And by retraced by carbon 14 method, we could find out that it is around 350 after Christ that these producers, Roman producers, maybe were growing grapes also in this area. After that came Charlemagne. He was in favor of grape growing, and all over Switzerland, they began to grow grapes.
Going back to the ancient Romans once again, are there any records of what the Romans thought of the quality of the wines that were produced in what we now call Switzerland?
Well, I think it's not to be compared with the grape varieties and with the wines we have today. I imagine that there were a little bit crude wines because they had not the possibilities we have today for getting rid of amount of acidity, and certainly these wines were very acid and not very drinkable every year. So one of the problem was solved by making a wine, a hot wine, add it with honey and add it with spices. And that's what we really like to drink still on Christmas or to New Year's Eve. We call it a Glühwein.
Mm-hmm. So it's not a Germanic invention, as some people think. It's not Nordic. It's definitely Roman.
Well, Roman or from the population which was here, and their wines were not so nice to drink, so they preferred to have these hot wines with additions of different herbs and spices.
Well, times have certainly changed, and so has the general quality of Swiss wines. How many different varieties, categories or types of wines are grown in this country today?
Well, it's interesting. The part with the most grape varieties, that's again Valais, they have about 14, 15 grape varieties. Some of these varieties are grown also in the west of Switzerland, and in the east of Switzerland, we have only 3 or 4 grape varieties which are standard and adapted to the climatic conditions.
On this point here, can one say that in Switzerland there's a great consciousness of getting the right sort of grape in the right kind of soil? It isn't a question of just planting anything.
Well, you see, it's limited. We have a law which was passed. It's a list of the grape varieties which can be planted in one area. And there, out of this list, we can use those grapes which are sure to be a success. And maybe Aminia, as I told in the beginning, would not be useful here in another part of Switzerland because the climatic conditions are different.
Everyone, I guess, who knows anything at all about wine has heard of the French Appellation Contrôlée laws, the laws and regulations on controlled appellations, that only a certain type of wine may grow in a certain area, and it's limited in quantity. Is Switzerland moving in the similar direction?
Yes. We have now the Parliament debating on a new law about viticulture. And in this law, they presume that for the future we have the Appellation Contrôlée as a basic institution for the quality wines. And I think that linked to the Appellation Contrôlée is a limited production and a high degree of ripeness so that these wines can have standards which are equal to foreign wines.
But before we give people the wrong impression, perhaps it's important to point out that the average standard, the general standard of Swiss wines, is already quite high. There's no question of junk or garbage table wines produced here.
Well, I can just tell you that this year was a very interesting year. We had 2 competitions, one for Expovina, that's a show of wines on the Lake of Zurich in about 10 ships at Zurich itself. And every second year we have a tasting for these wines. There were about 1,000 wines we had to taste. And there were wines from every country outside of Switzerland and also a lot of Swiss wines, about a third. And we can find out that the gold medals which were given to Swiss wines by these tasters, neutral tasters, were very high, more than maybe for French wines or for Italian wines. And that gives a good impression of the quality of wines. There's a second fact. This year we had the 700 years of the existence of Switzerland, of the Confédération Helvétique. And therefore, we had again a tasting competition of only Swiss wines. There were about 2,500 Swiss wines to be tasted. And especially it was interesting that the wines from the eastern part of Switzerland, from the German-speaking part, were in favor of gold medals. I must tell you that this is the consequence of a wonderful 2-3 wonderful vintages beginning in 88, 89 and 90. And these 3 vintages were presented and we had really success with these wines because it was were outstanding vintages.
I'd like to take you up on this because in the other traditional and much older wine-growing areas of Switzerland, the French part especially, and also to a large extent in Canton Ticino, they're, to put it politely, a bit skeptical about the quality of wines grown in German Switzerland, particularly Eastern Switzerland. You've proved them wrong on this, and I believe we can say that that has a lot to do with a great deal of research which you yourself have been involved in for a long time.
Right. I think we made progresses in the last 30 years, a huge amount of progresses in winemaking, in all the, also what we use as machinery, from the cold to the heat, to filtration, to all the possibilities needed in a modern cellar. And also the techniques have changed enormously. I don't think it's possible now to trace all these things back. But finally, I can admit that what we have now is the standard of America or of the most evoluted country, of winemaking country.
There's one type of grape which I think of right away when I hear Eastern Switzerland referred to in the context of wine, and that is the Riesling Silvaner.
Professor Müller-Thurgau, and in Germany it's the name of Müller-Thurgau given to the grape. We have it as a Riesling Silvaner. It's a crossbreed made by Müller-Thurgau between the two late-ripening varieties, Riesling and Silvaner. And out of this breed, he found out that one of the new plants was better than everyone else, and this one was the number 58 and was propagated and came to bear the first vines for the National Exhibition 1914 in Bern. And interesting is the fact that the wines from this Riesling, this Silvaner, at that time were very, very skeptically adopted by the tasters, because they said it's a strong foreign flavor and low acidity, and just that's what we want, a low acidity to compete with other countries. And therefore the Müller-Thurgau has convinced the Austrians, and it's the most spread variety also in Germany.
Of all the different kinds of grape varieties grown and used in Switzerland in winemaking, can one pick out one or two as the great grapes of this country?
Yeah. I think I go back to the Valais again and see maybe a Hermitage or an Arvin or Amine. These are wonderful wines produced in small quantities and lasting a very long time in the cellar for 5, 6, 7 years. They need this time just to get to the high point, to the optimum of the evolution. On the other hand, when we go to the Ticino, I prefer a wonderful Merlot, which is quite different, which has its tannic content and also has the specific signs of a good wine. And if I'd come back to the Swiss-German, there could be Pinot Noir, maybe my own wine is always the best. But on the other hand, we have such a huge amount of wines we can compare. And I would say specialties here, that's the Pinot Gris and some Gewürztraminer, and that's outstanding.
If we look at the standard of Swiss wines, the quality of them, do they compare favorably with the great wine-producing nations like France, like Italy, for example?
I would say the standard of Switzerland, and because our climatic conditions are varying from one place to the other, and these conditions are again different from those of Italy and from France, and the grape varieties are different, I would say we can't compare them as such. But if we want to have a look at the standard, it seems to me that maybe for the South Tyrol or for northern Italy, we have some wines which could be compared, especially in this respect, it is the south part of Switzerland with the Merlot, the Ticino.
What about the purity of Swiss wines? People are concerned about chemical additives today, biological methods of producing wines. How far along the road are we here?
Well, a new way we are going is the integrated production. And this means that we only use the minimum of herbicides, the minimum of insecticides and so on. And we are spraying only when the danger of damage in the crop is imminent that we have to do it. And on the other hand, when these grapes come into the cellar, they are intact, they are sane, and in the cellar itself, we use only the smallest amount of helps, like maybe sulfur dioxide in small amounts, maybe also calcium carbonate, maybe, but nothing else. The list we have of all the products we could use is very long, but it is only a list, and the biggest part, we don't need it, never.
Dr. Walter Eckenberger, thank you very much.
Thank you.
If you want more information about Switzerland in Sound, check them out online at www.switzerlandinsound.com.
Hi, this is Bob Zanotti. Do you miss Swiss Radio International? If so, I invite you to visit my website, SwitzerlandInSound.com. Colorful and informative radio features about Switzerland, its destinations, interesting people, politics, culture, and even the two Bobs, SwitzerlandInSound.com, where English language radio from Switzerland lives on.